This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm. Welcome to Campus Voices. I'm your host, Michael Ayers, and today we're talking about concussion awareness. According to a researcher from the National Institute of Health, a concussion is considered a traumatic brain injury caused by a bump, blow, or joint to the head, or by a hit to the body that causes the head and brain to move rapidly back and forth. This sudden movement can cause the brain to bounce around or twist in the skull. That can create chemical changes in the brain and sometimes stretch and damage brain cells. Recent studies also suggest a correlation between some sports, also known as CTE. WRFL reporter Samantha Angel reports on what UK athletic teams do to protect their athletes from the effects of concussions.
Graduate Assistant Athletic Trainers Angel Lazoo on what happens when a UK athlete is suspected to have a concussion.
Depending on where they're hit at in terms of the field, not specifically on their face or head, we pull them off the field and bring them right into the training room, or if they're already in the training room, bring them in. And we assess their balance, their vision, and at the beginning of the season, we take baseline scores of everyone. Well, with a paper that's called SCAT-3.
During the testing, an athletic trainer will ask the athlete several questions that help the training staff correctly diagnose and evaluate the potential concussion.
Like, have you had any past concussions before? If so, how long did it take you to recover from it? When was the most recent one? Do you have any learning disabilities such as ADD, ADHD, any history of depression or anxiety, anyone in your family? And then it asks you, there's a list of like headache, feeling fatigued, sleepy, feeling more emotional than usual, difficulty concentrating or remembering. So those are listed on a scale of 0 to 6, and we have the athlete, you know, rate their pain on a scale of 0 to 6, 6 being severe. So we ask them for the month, the time of day, where they're at, like the venue. Do they remember what happened? If it's like in the middle of a football game, we ask them, do you remember the score? Do you remember what quarter it is?
They also administer a number and word recall. The trainer gives a series of numbers and asks the athlete to repeat them back to him backwards. Then they give them a series of words such as elbow, apple, saddle, carpet, and bubble. The athlete is told to remember those words so that he or she can recite it back to the trainer at the end of the test. The trainer has the athlete complete a balance test in between the word recall.
And then comes the balance part of the test, where we have them stand on 2 feet, you know, looking at you to see if they wobble or sway at all. Then we have them close their eyes, because that throws off the vestibular system, and see if that causes any more of a headache. Then we have them stand on 1 foot, eyes open, 1 foot, eyes closed. And then we have them stand with their dominant foot behind their non-dominant foot, kind of like staggered, and then we do the same thing, eyes open and eyes closed. And then the final part is the word recall, when we tell them, do you remember those 5 words I told you? And all of this is based on a scale, like on a number scale. So let's say their headache was at a 2, and then difficulty concentrating was at like a 3, and you know, feeling tired was like at a 6. So we will add all those numbers up, and a possible total score you can get is 32.
Surprisingly, we learned that coaches do not go through specific training regarding concussion awareness and protocol.
They send out a concussion awareness form that the coaches, the student athletic trainers, the grad assistants, the full-times, and basically if you're involved with the team, you need to read this form and sign it. So then that shows that you're aware of the concussion and like what is a concussion, how to, some of the signs and symptoms of concussion. So it's not like anyone needs a specific training. They just read it and need to know like some of the symptoms and what to look for.
UK Athletics training staff takes concussion protocol seriously, but is it enough? For WRFL Radio, I'm Samantha Angel.
With us tonight, we have three clinical neuropsychology doctoral students. Brittany Walls is a fourth-year graduate student in the clinical psychology program at University of Kentucky. Brittany, can you tell our listeners what your area of specialization is?
Yes, so this is Brittany Walls. Like you said, I'm a fourth-year doctoral student in the clinical neuropsychology program, and my primary interest is in epilepsy.
Great. Chelsea Bosch is also here with us today. She is a third-year student in the clinical psychology PhD program at the University of Kentucky, earning a specialization in neuropsychology. Chelsea, can you explain what you're studying?
Sure. So I'm at third year, like you said. I'm also interested in seizures and epilepsy and overall just brain-behavior relationships.
Great. And Liz Wallace is a third-year graduate student in the clinical psychology program at UK, specializing in neuropsychology. Liz, how about you? What is your particular area?
Yeah, so I'm interested in the assessment of cognitive changes in movement disorders specifically, like Parkinson's disease.
Awesome. So, Brittany, we'll start with you. As Sam mentioned, the UK athletic training staff tests for balance, vision, and a number and a word recall. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the initial sideline testing involves a lot of different things. So they're also looking at checking the person's airway and breathing, circulation, things like that. Like you said, they're looking for balance issues, any sort of movement problems. They're also looking for anything more serious that might require the person to go to the emergency room. So like something like a spinal cord injury or something like that, or if there's any indication of like the brain bleeding, something like really significant that might require the athlete to be taken to the emergency room.
And what would they do to find maybe a bleeding in the brain or a spinal cord injury? What would hurt on the player?
So for bleeding on the brain, that would take imaging, but the athlete might show certain neurobehavioral symptoms that might indicate there may be some kind of bleed on the brain.
Great. Yeah. And why is it important to assess these factors and not just ask, you know, where it hurts or if they have a headache?
I feel like a lot of times athletes may not know the specific symptoms of a concussion. So having a standard protocol in terms of what to ask is definitely very important. Because if you just rely on the athlete, they may not know what to tell you.
And I think some of the deficits, they might not be as visible as, you know, they're having trouble walking or, you know, a balance problem. That's certainly serious. But, I mean, thinking also about kind of the number recall, like we talked about. So, I mean, that's really getting at, you know, are they able to, kind of the short-term memory, are they able to hold on to information, manipulate it effectively? And that kind of goes into the cognitive deficits that might not be as apparent at first.
Okay. And there's a training staff there available for athletes to use if they were to get hurt and hurt their head. But do you guys think coaches should be trained as well instead of just signing off on a piece of paper that they may have not have read?
I definitely think so. I think whoever's in charge of making the ultimate return to play decision should have an understanding of what concussions are and what the symptoms are, and exactly, you know, how serious they can be. I think a lot of people do have the perception that a concussion really is like simply a hit on the head, but like you were kind of saying earlier, it could be, I mean, there could be brain bleeds, it could be twisting or tearing of the brain that people may not realize is actually happening as part of a concussion. So having a more thorough understanding of what a concussion might entail is important when you're trying to decide if your player should go back into the game.
Mm-hmm. And some players may be tougher than other players, but why is it important for athletes to be honest with their training staff about their symptoms?
That's very important because once someone sustains a concussion, the likelihood of having another one increases greatly. And it's really problematic if someone sustains a concussion while they're still recovering from the first one, and it could lead to serious neurological problems such as second impact syndrome, which involves uncontrollable swelling of the brain. So if an athlete is not honest about their symptoms, things get much worse. And so it's important for the athlete to be honest. But I could also see why someone would want to or be motivated not to report that if they're scared of losing their scholarship or losing their spot on the team or moving up to the next level, things like that, or appearing weak or something like that. I could definitely see why people would not want to report it. But I think better education in terms of the consequences is definitely important, because if you don't, then things could get really bad.
In explaining to an 18-year-old to tell the truth sometimes when they want to play the sport that they love can be kind of tough. Mm-hmm. I mean, what advice would you tell that student to just be honest and just say, hey, my head hurts?
I think it's important for them to understand the potential long-term consequences. So feeling like they probably have this immediate urge or desire to get back in the game and do what they love. But if they, you know, are playing football, but, you know, didn't have an idea of the potential for CTE or the chronic traumatic encephalopathy way down the road, I feel like perhaps their decision could be better informed if they knew that they could have such long-term consequences if they were to get repeat injuries.
Great. How do you guys think other factors such as class schedules, homesickness, and stress levels can affect concussion recovery process?
I think it's really difficult for people to realize, like I said, or like Liz was saying earlier, some of the more cognitive pieces that kind of go along with a concussion. So they may realize like, okay, maybe my balance is okay, or my head doesn't hurt anymore, but they may not realize how much trouble they have cognitively or thinking. So doing a lot of things in their day-to-day activities may be a lot more of a challenge for them than they realize.
Mm-hmm. And they may need some kind of academic accommodations while they're recovering. So extended test time or taking days off from school just to gradually increase their cognitive load might be useful too.
And you mentioned that once someone gets one concussion, it can kind of resurface later down the road. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So there is evidence that once someone sustains a concussion, their brain is more vulnerable. And so the likelihood of having another one is also very high. And it could also be a factor in terms of how this person is playing, the way they're moving, maybe something how they're interacting on the field could be a potential factor in their ability or their risk of having a concussion. So once you get one, then, yeah, the likelihood of another one is definitely great. And like I said, you don't want to have one while you're still recovering from the first one, because that could be really serious.
And, I mean, the effects of the initial concussion may only last, hours, days, possibly weeks. But like Brittany was saying, there is a lot of evidence about this post-concussion syndrome that can last a lot longer. So just the deficits are just persisting into possibly months. So definitely not rushing the recovery process and making sure that you're just taking things slow, because the progress does take a while to see sometimes.
That's great. Great insight. WRFL reporter Michelle reports on how UK offers services so you don't have to fall behind in schoolwork after a concussion.
The accommodations consultant from UK's Disability Resource Center, Duke Pettit, about why schoolwork may be more difficult after receiving a concussion and how they can help.
A lot of times when students come with a concussion, a lot of it has to do with stamina, mental fatigue, the ability to concentrate for extended periods of time, as well as their processing abilities go. A lot of times students with concussions have a diminished ability to process information, slower reading, slower synthesis of information, note-taking, things of that matter. A lot of it has to do with visual aspects as well. A lot of students who come in with concussions, extended periods of time of viewing a computer screen can cause abnormal effects, migraines, vision impairments, things like that.
After being diagnosed with a concussion, different things can be more difficult for you to do, such as taking notes in class or doing online homework. The Disability Resource Center offers different services to help students succeed after experiencing a concussion.
So what we want to do is we want to accommodate the students' needs. A lot of the things that we can do here in the accommodation side of the house is we can build in those types of accommodations that can support their recovery. What we can do is we can extend testing time to facilitate the processing disorders that are associated with the concussion. We can also request that students receive paper exams instead of looking at anything that has to do with staring for long periods at a time at the computer. We can also request extensions on assignments of, once again, processing the delays, the fatigue, looking at how can we facilitate their learning, and once again, asking for extensions on larger papers. What we can do to help some of the neuropsych part of it, having to go to doctor's appointments, requesting flexibility with attendance with a modification agreement form like that. And then, you know, note-taking, you're sitting in class, once again, you have the mental fog, the loss of focus, the fatigue associated with the concussion itself, requesting that students be provided overhead notes, lecture material, things like that. And then just really talking to the student and seeing what or how their concussion affects their academic standing, and then, you know, really trying to create an accommodation profile that fits the needs of the student.
When it comes to these services, the Disability Resource Center works with students until they feel comfortable that they can do without them. Each student is different, though, when it comes to the recovery time frame.
So there's really no hard and fast date when things are cut off, once again, because the brain's a funny thing. And no one is the same as the next. All brain injuries are like snowflakes. They're all very unique, and the recovery time is, once again, flexible and malleable just due to the nature of the injury.
The Disability Resource Center does its best to help a student succeed after trauma to the brain. But is it possible the student may never be at the same learning level as before? For WRFL Radio, I'm Michelle Knezovic.
Okay, Chelsea, we'll start with you this time. How does a break in strenuous activities such as staring at a computer screen or being timed on a test help the brain heal from an injury?
Yeah, so I think those things are all really important. The best advice for recovering from any kind of concussion or brain injury is really just to rest and relax. So being able to lighten the cognitive load in any way that you can kind of assists the brain in kind of like not maxing itself out on these different tasks that you have to do. So being able, like I said, to lighten that cognitive load can kind of help you rest the brain in order to let it heal.
And what are some of these activities that people may struggle with after a concussion?
Yeah, definitely things that require a lot of focus or possibly a heightened processing speed or, you know, your ability to think quickly through things are some of the most sensitive when it comes to concussions. So, you know, like I said, being able to focus for long amounts of time or concentrate, maintain that concentration can be difficult. Taking the time limit off tests can be important because you're not stressing yourself to complete a task within a certain amount of time in case your thinking has slowed down.
And do post-concussion symptoms relate to those who have been diagnosed with ADHD in terms of being able to focus?
So I mean, there are some symptom overlaps that we can look at, especially thinking about difficulty focusing, difficulty thinking clearly, trouble with attention, you know, sustained cognitive load kind of. So that can be tricky, especially if there is pre-existing ADD and then you get a concussion on top of that. That can kind of compound the deficits and make it even harder to recover. So there are kind of some overlaps there specifically with the attention piece.
And will this difficulty improve over time, or is it something they have to deal with for long term?
after sustaining a concussion, the hope is that the symptoms would go away, hopefully in the course of a couple of weeks max. But of course, if the symptoms are related to ADHD, that's more of a lifelong condition. So the trouble focusing and things like that, you know, would last much longer. I think the difficulty could come in potentially if somebody already has a diagnosis of ADHD and then potentially gets a concussion and they don't realize that there's been a change in the symptoms, or maybe some symptoms of inattention or lack of focus may just be attributed to the ADHD and the concussion may go undiagnosed. Then it could become more problematic.
And when clearing a concussed patient, if staring at a screen or making, if they're taking a test, if that hurts their brain, but playing a physical activity doesn't, what would you tell them?
I would say that our cognitive abilities may be a little bit more nuanced than some of our physical abilities. So while they may not notice any struggle in their physical recovery, it takes some pretty specialized tasks to be able to detect some changes in our thinking. So they may be harder for the person to recognize on their own. And so I definitely caution them to engage in any more of those physical activities before it seems like their cognitive abilities or thinking has, like, gone back to kind of baseline or where it was before.
Great. WRFL reporter Samantha Angel found out more information on a recent local concussion protocol development.
Initiated a new concussion protocol for jockeys, mandating that all jockeys that come to ride have to have a baseline test. PhD and Associate Dean of UK College of Health Sciences, Dr. Carl Matacola, gave us insight on this new protocol and how they plan to expand it in the future.
I've been involved with working with Keeneland through the Jockey Guild and through the Jockey Club. And several years ago, they began some baseline testing for the industry. And they used a test called impact testing, which is a very well-known and standardized and reliable system. The challenge is you have to have a computer system and someone that's relatively well-trained to work somebody through it, specifically if English is a second language. And so when they first instituted that, it was a challenge to get jockeys to volunteer to participate, and then there also was a personnel aspect where someone needed to be present. So as we've evolved, one of the things that's happened is we've identified a test that can be done on-site, but that also would provide a baseline if somebody should come off.
Dr. Matacola believes recent studies with CTE and the National Football League have influenced a greater need for concussion awareness in other sports, too.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as big as the NFL is, both numbers of players and the dollars that are associated with it, and certainly the PR, absolutely. If you told me 10 years ago that we would be modifying practices and modifying rules, and there'd be conversations relative to whether or not to even allow contact in certain aspects of the sport, I would say you're crazy. I think one of the positives of, if you think of anything we do, and there's a term that's often used, evidence-based practice or evidence-based medicine. This is a good example of that. We've identified the consequences, and we're doing things to highlight it, as well as to bring forward ways of having improved rules, improved equipment, improved standards.
However, horse racing is a little unique compared to other leagues.
One of the challenges that I've said before is that what's interesting when you compare horse racing to some other sports is that many other sports have a governing body. There's the NFL, there's the NHL, there's the NCAA. So there's some larger organization that's providing a set of rules and guidelines. And horse racing is different because those rules are often a state by state or jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And in some cases, as we've seen at Keeneland, those rules can be controlled at the local level. So Keeneland is making the case that everyone has to be baseline tested prior to participating, and that they would use that information as part of their decision making. Not all tracks have the luxury, or not all tracks have elected to do that for different reasons. So our goal, I think, in the future is that we can begin to roll this out as a model that other tracks can use.
Because every single concussion or head injury is different, the importance of being able to test each individual athlete in any sport is necessary. For WRFL, I'm Samantha Angel.
Okay, Dr. Matacola and Keeneland are the first to initiate a concussion protocol in horse racing industry. Do you think the dangers of concussions are growing since the recent study of Boston University regarding CTE in the late NFL players? And just to remind our listeners, this is the study that looked at the brains of former football players. The players of their families donated the brains when the football players died. The study found 110 out of 111 brains of former NFL players had CTE. Many of those players had dementia or Parkinson's disease before they passed away. Do you think there will ever be a way to diagnose or recognize CTE symptoms in a living brain rather than just an autopsy?
Mm-hmm. I think as the research continues to develop, potentially there could be a way to diagnose this while the person is living. I know people are looking at different tau tracers. So CT is characterized by accumulation of tau in the brain. So they're looking at testing these tracers in order to detect it in the living brain, but these haven't been validated yet. And then I was also reading that there are researchers in Boston that are looking at a protein in CSF. So people are looking at different ways to sort of make this, you know, potentially a diagnosis that can be done while the person is living. So I guess the answer is we'll see.
And USA Today just released an article, and they talked about out of 84 deceased players with more severe cases of CTE, 89% had behavioral or mood symptoms. At that point, is it too late? Is there anything they can do? What do you recommend for people that are in the late stages of CTE? And I guess how would you know that? You don't know that, but what can they do if they're you know, receiving symptoms like that?
I feel like kind of that constellation of symptoms that would lead a clinician to think CTE is occurring in the brain while the person is still living maybe would be able to help them decide if the person might benefit from any kind of psychotherapy or medication to help manage the symptoms. I think at this point, there's not much we can do to cure it if we, you know, were to find somebody who has it, but maybe medication or therapy to help manage some of those mood or behavioral symptoms could be effective. It also kind of depends on the state that, you know, the rest of their cognitive functioning is in, if they'd be able to engage in therapy, if that would be helpful.
And as we wrap up here, looking ahead, do you guys think there will ever be a way to prevent concussions or just a better way to treat them?
I feel like getting the word out is kind of the first step. So definitely helping people become a lot more educated about what a concussion actually is extremely important, because I think people have a tendency to downplay it as kind of a bump on the head. So letting people know about the symptoms and the potential long-term effects could be extremely useful.
Mm-hmm. And as people are learning more about it, different sports organizations are making changes in terms of the rules that players are allowed to do during the game. So, for example, in football, I know they've limited the number of contact practices and limited two-a-days, things like that. So at the higher level, things are changing as well as people become more aware of the consequences.
Yeah, and like Brittany said, I mean, there are a lot of promising, you know, logistical changes that are happening in a lot of different sports. But I think going back to kind of the toughness comment, like, it seems like the culture of a lot of these games just needs to change, like playing through the pain, not, you know, not being encouraged to play through the pain, really stop and be able to evaluate, you know, what is happening, this could be a concussion, and, you know, not being ashamed of or scared of saying that. But that is a much bigger change, and I don't have any steps for how to do that today, but something to think about.
I want to say thank you to our experts. We have a better insight on the difficulties of studying and diagnosing concussions because each head injury is different than the one that will follow it. It's important for everyone to be aware of the possibility of a concussion, whether they're an athlete or not. We hope to see a day when concussions are a rarity. Until then, we are grateful for those who are studying and working to better understand our brains. I'd like to thank our guests, UK Clinical Neuropsychology doctoral students Chelsea Bosch, Brittany Walls, and Elizabeth Wallace for their time and sharing their insight tonight. Thank you for joining us tonight on Campus Voices. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL Lexington. I'm Michael Ayers.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.